Oh man, I just love the Timber Toes. I can't get enough of children's highlights.
Mr. Dini?
Yes.
The doctor will see you now.
Oh, thank you. Which doctor am I seeing today? Dr. Bernstein? Dr.
No, no, you're going to see Dr. Shy.
Dr. Shy. Mm-hmm. Okay, okay. I usually see Dr. Bernstein, but okay. Dr. Shy. Dr. R.A. Shy.
Welcome to the office, jackass!
Rashi! R.A. Shy! Oh! I can't believe I fell for... Hey!
So yeah, well, this
What are these clamps doing?
Well, they're keeping you on the table.
Let me out of here.
No!
Rashi?
You need them teeth out, Dad, and I'm just a man to do it.
What are those, pliers?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Those are the rusty pliers from the garage.
Yes, they're the one the handyman left.
And the bolt cutters? No, no, no.
Yes.
No.
Well, we're going to have to get them out. They're stuck in your bone.
There's... Get me out of here. My insurance doesn't cover this.
You don't have to pay nothing. This is a reward in and of itself.
I'm Misty Lee, and we've got some special guests tonight.
Yep, yep. Explaining about the brief intro, we were inspired to cook that up. I was at the dentist and the orthodontist today. I'm having two wisdom teeth pulled out Friday.
It's going to ruin your life, dude.
What?
You're going to be laid up for days. I'm going to have to get you a wheelchair.
The doctor said to me today, the orthodontist said, we're going to knock you out and take out the teeth because it looks like, you know, there are two ways we can do it. We can give you
Hold
a local
anesthetic. Are you recording this?
Yeah.
Good, because I want you to record this for all of posterity.
The doctor said there are two ways we can do this. We can give you a local and then and do it that way. But it looks like your roots on the bottom wisdom tooth are really into the nerve. So rather than do that, we're going to, you know, put you to sleep, you know, knock you out for a while.
So they're just removing your wisdom teeth though, right?
Yeah.
Okay, it may sound like they're going to take them all out.
No.
Thank you.
But Supergirl here, who apparently has removed...
Who was in dentistry for 13 years.
And removed her own wisdom teeth with
I
a toothpick.
With a pliers 13. In yeah. the back of a car.
Yeah.
No, I had them take it... my teeth were laterally impacted. My lower wisdom teeth were, which means that they were lying sideways, mm-hmm. down near the trigeminal nerve, way down here, sideways. They had to cut a hole in my jaw, cut the tooth in half, and they were partially ankylosed, which means that the bone was fused to the jawbone.
Oh.
I had that shit done on my lunch hour, and this son of a bitch is going to get knocked out.
And then you walked 4 miles to school and had three babies.
Uphill in the snow.
And cooked for the entire 10th Regiment.
Thank you. Yes, I did.
Yes, you did.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm only going with the
knocked
doctor.
Out. Okay. No, you're not going with what the doctor said. The doctor said, we can do this with local, and you went, oh, God. Oh, no. I can't do it.
I
can't with you.
I honest to God said to him, I'm kind of tempted to do it with no anesthetic because I want to kind of do the Jack Nicholson or Bill
you
Murray.
Did not
like in Little
that.
Shop of Horrors, depending on which one.
You wept one
did.
Magic tear and he offered you
it's
anesthesia.
The
gas.
No.
It turns
no.
Me on.
I went with what he recommended and I said, okay. And he said, we're going to put an IV. They're going to put an IV in. You know how much I hate needles. He had to talk me into
You're
going to
get a needle no matter what.
He had to talk me. Well, if it's in my mouth, I don't see it. Oddly enough, I open my mouth, I roll my eyes back, and I don't see it.
Thank
there's
you
little,
for the visual. That really helps.
There's a little sting in there, and like eating an anchovy when it goes into your gum.
What kind of anchovies are you eating that they anesthetize the inside of your face?
When you eat an anchovy, and you wouldn't know this because you've never eaten them.
I will never know.
But they're kind of furry. They've got these little bones,
oh,
and they kind of
God,
prick the top of your...
Oh, God, a furry fish?
Yeah, they kind of prick the top of your mouth. And so anyway, so I can deal with that because I don't see it coming, really. But the thing
the
in my
anchovy
arm...
The anchovy or the shot?
The shot. The thing in my arm I'm more wary about, but the doctor actually kind of had to talk me into that and said, this will be best. You go to sleep for like... half hour, 20 minutes, and then when you wake up, it's fine. You go home. So, but he didn't want me doing anything the rest of the day. So just go home and rest and drink some soup.
Yes, you're going to be laid up. You're going to need a wheelchair. I'm going to have to call in a nurse. Have some stripper gram come to the door and wish you to get well. All of it. All of it. You're gonna need it. You heard me. I did not start.
Stripper gram? What? Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's when people get their teeth out. That's what they get.
Really?
No.
Oh. I was falling for that hook, line, and sinker. I was like, I want my teeth out.
Oh. Yeah, only people who get local anesthesia
puppy,
get that.
Puppy.
Yes, Super Rica.
Are you ready for your stripper gram?
No, Stupor Rica. That's by
Stupor Rica.
I practiced all the time with the balloon. I do a balloon dancing. It's for you.
No,
oh, that's disturbing.
No, thank you.
Furry fish and sock monkeys doing balloon strip grams. What are you doing?
I don't know.
He's already been anesthetized.
I guess so. His brain's numb.
I'm talking wacky. I've had too much laughing gas.
I guess so.
Laughing gas.
Smilex.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, let's see. What's the news? What's today? Today is
the 14th, 15th
of November?
Yeah, November.
Yeah, that's right. So I noticed Texas is trying to secede from the Union yet again. Try every few years or so.
They just can't stand this United States. Huh?
I don't know. They seem to have all the, you know, it's all... They didn't get their way in the election, so now they've thrown some stuff into a pillowcase. They've got their lunchbox down, and they're going to run away from home again. And they're headed for the end of the driveway, but they can't cross the street, so they're just going to sit there for a while and mope. You know,
it'll be our own country, and Bush will be president every year.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry, but I also read a petition by the thinking Texans, of which there are a greater number, who said that doesn't really represent us. You know, nobody I know in Austin feels that way, and but I'm sure the. The others from Texas are the more mutant part of mutant Texas are feeling that way. Or there, a lot of people just, you know, they've had it with the U.S. They want to secede. The first time I ever knew what seceding was, the characters tried to do it in Pogo because, again, they were fed up with an election. Wiley Cat, who is like this redneck character, Walt Kelly used to draw him. Originally drew him as kind of this scabby little wildcat. Then he made him like this big, almost kind of like Archie Bunker type right-wing John Bircher character with a shotgun was going to secede from the Union because he just didn't want it anymore because, you know, it didn't fit in with a redneck scheme of that part of Georgia or wherever they were from. And it all collapsed into idiocy as it does in Pogo.
But kind of like, you know, losing at a football game and taking your ball back and going, I'm going home.
Yeah, yeah.
Why are you not talking to Eddie?
Well, we were talking about the news and about how Texas is planning to secede from the Union. Kind of like when Rashi ran away from home.
Mm-hmm,
he packed up his lunch kit and he got to the end, but he can't cross the street.
No. He just sat at the end of the driveway, very sad.
Yeah. It's like, you know, Texas, come back. Come on. You know.
They're not going to secede.
They're not going to secede. It's going to take too much money and come on, really. Like, come on.
It'll be like that episode of Family Guy where Peter Griffin decided he was president because of the way they zoned their... the way they zone their yard.
Oh, yeah.
And he didn't think about things like when you pay taxes, you get garbage pickup. So where do you put that? And how much would it cost to get rid of your garbage if you live in the middle of America?
Yeah.
Where are you going to get your water from? What are your natural resources? You know, it's like you didn't really think that through. So
I mean, you know, everybody's seen the Honey Boo Boo show. If Texas succeeds, that, you know, it'll be that for the whole state.
Well, that's Georgia.
What, Honey Boo Boo?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I wasn't sure where she was from.
She's from Georgia.
Oh, okay.
Oh, honey, I know.
Oh, you know.
We actually, excuse me, Renee and I co-bought, well, actually I bought, but we have co-ownership of this piece.
Piece is a very accurate description of what it is.
A painting. There's this hyena gallery here in Burbank, California. Love. You can talk. You're on the microphone, Lily. No, she's shy.
We have to introduce them, shall we?
Oh, she's so sexy. Yes.
Shall we introduce our guests?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, by all means. Do you want me to do it?
Please.
Or we can have them introduce themselves. We have Lily von... I'll tell you. We have Lily von Stupp, and we have Eddie Medrano back.
Thank you. Welcome back.
Yes.
It's the second part or third part.
This is going to be part three.
The multi-part of the Eddie Show.
Part three with Lily.
With special,
there she is.
Added attraction, Lily. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, attraction indeed.
Yes.
You got to get a look
double
at this
D.
chick. Huh?
Huh? Nothing.
Oh, double D. Yeah. Very nice.
Now,
very nice.
Lily, can you tell us what you do? Tell our listeners.
She's a dentist.
Yes.
No, she's not.
I'm a burlesque producer, performer, and educator.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm. That is awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, we were talking, she has had some of amazing opportunities to work with some remarkable people and learn from and teach with. Mm-hmm. And Yeah, all kinds of stuff.
Very, very lucky that I got to grow up and meet the women who inspired me to be comedic and funny and sexual and not afraid of my sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
And to be able to take classes with them and you know, learn from them and then pass that on to the next generation is something that I hold very dear.
See, yeah. I love filling our house and our lives with people like Lily and Eddie, because we have magic, we have circus, we have burlesque, we have performance, we have music, we have everything. Mm-hmm. Just between the three of you. And I get to watch it all.
Well, you get to see.
Last night you did.
You write it all up.
Well, I sort of. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like I don't do any of the things you guys do, but I have a tremendous affection and affinity for it.
Mm-hmm. Aww.
Yeah.
Well, the last time I took my clothes off in public, it was not very, very pretty. So, but unfortunately, I can't.
Well, we have Meat Fest in 2 weeks, so if you'd like to do it again, I'm happy to put you on the
show. Is that Meat Fest or Beef Fest?
Meat Fest. It's an all boylesque show. It's our male counterparts in the burlesque community.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you want to come take your clothes off, I've got a stage for you.
That's all right. You don't want most of your audience turning to stone. I mean,
I don't think that would be the case at
okay,
all.
Okay, well, I thank you. Thank you, but I politely declined. It's bad enough trying to get me out at Comic-Con, but...
It's bad enough trying to get you to put on pants.
Well, yeah, I mean... Around
I mean, the... I would think that would be exactly where you want to be. You don't have to wear pants.
Very true.
That's true.
He has announced that pants are his mortal enemy.
Yes, I am.
If he had a nemesis, it would be pants.
It would be pants.
Well, I agree with you. Honestly, Eddie will come home and I will be sitting in a pair of underwear and a fur coat if it's cold.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's all. I walk around the house in panties all the time.
And he claps his hands and raises them to the heavens and says, "Thank you, baby Jesus."
No, I just like forget what I was supposed to do and just stare.
Yeah. I grew up in Florida, so it was always hot. Uh-huh. And clothing is... It
optional.
Just seems unnatural to be wrapped up. I hate wearing coats. I moved to Portland, Oregon for a while, and it was like cold and wet and dreary, and I was always like being strangled by clothing.
Wow.
So, yeah. So I'm with you on that. No pants should be the law.
We should all just Donald Duck it.
Yeah, there you go.
The first time I ever heard that expression, David Lindelof used it in The Lost Rooms. Somebody was just Donald Ducking it around the office. And I said, "What?" And he goes, "Well, think about it. It's no pants, right?" And it's like, yeah, that's pretty brilliant.
Brilliant. Mm-hmm.
I laughed about that all day.
Porky Pig works, too.
Yeah,
Porky
I guess so.
Porky Pig in it.
Yeah, Porky
Although
Pig
that sounds a little...
Porky Pig in it sounds really dirty.
A little dirty.
Donald Duck, I mean, you know, none of those ducks wear pants.
Mm-mm.
Scrooge has, I don't know, how many billions of dollars. He can't afford one pair of clothes. Not one.
Mm-mm.
But the body shape doesn't work. You know, you put them in pants, they look weird.
Yeah, they would.
Yeah.
Pear
Not
shape.
Weird? With pants? Bull of Heaven.
Bull of Heaven.
Bull of Heaven.
That's your latest fetish.
Oh, I can't get it.
This is a painting of the Bull of Heaven. Is that the same thing as the...
Bull of Heaven.
What is the Bull of Heaven? What religion is that from?
Oh, I don't know. It's mythology somehow. It's Ishtar, so probably Babylonian. It's Ishtar,
oh,
Babylonian.
It's on the Ishtar Gate. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's the bull that's on the Ishtar Gate with the mm-hmm. Shira, the dragon.
Yeah. Well, what it was apparently Ishtar was a little brat, and uh-huh. she wanted to marry Gilgamesh, ?
Oh, somebody.
I don't know. Maybe
Hercules.
I'm making that up. No, it was a G.
Paul Bunyan. Yeah.
No. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And so Paul Bunyan said, "No, I will not marry you," and she got mad
uh-huh.
and went up to Anu, her father, and said, "Daddy, I want the Bull of Heaven because that asshole won't marry me."
Uh-huh.
And her dad said, "No, you can't have it." And she said, "Daddy, if you don't give it to me, I will smash the gate down like I did to the underworld." So he was like, okay, take the Bull of Heaven. And she was like, "Thank you." So she took the Bull of Heaven and she rightly smacked around whoever this guy was with a friggin' Bull of Heaven. And I was like, Bull of Heaven on my Christmas list.
Okay.
I want my own Bull of Heaven.
Bull of Heaven.
And so I immediately looked up Bull of Heaven because I am in love with the Bull of Heaven now. Because what? Why is there a bull in heaven? Yeah, just yes. It's just yes across the board.
For heavenly burgers.
Right?
Yeah,
of course.
Boo.
Okay.
All right. So anyway, and I got all excited, and so I found this painting.
Yeah.
Bull of Heaven. It's standing in the sky, half between the blue storm and the yellow sun, and it looks like it is wearing a pair of pants. And it is the best painting I've ever seen in my life.
That's your new deity. Huh?
And it is my deity. And you can order acrylic prints. I found it on this website. You can order acrylic prints, not prints the symbol, prints of the painting.
Yeah. Right.
And I contacted her and I was like, "I don't want a print. I want the original art." Like, I can't have substitute Bull of Heaven. That's like Bull of Here. I don't want that. I want Bull of Heaven, that one.
Yeah.
Won't return my emails.
She's living off the money she made selling the original to somebody else. She's off bowling in the Bahamas or something.
Breaking
like that.
My heart is what she's doing.
Sorry.
Bull of Heartache.
Sorry.
That's what it is.
Do you want me to commission somebody to do a painting of Bull of Heaven?
Not the same.
Out of balloons?
No.
Balloon of Heaven. Balloon of Heaven. There we go. Eddie brought has favored us with another astounding
man,
balloon
you guys
creation.
See this? This is
last
epic.
Week it was Screwy Squirrel. This week it's the Hulk.
Half.
The Hulk out of green balloons.
Who's also mortal enemy? Pants.
Pants.
Pants. No pants for you.
No pants for Hulk.
No pants for Hulk.
Like, you know, the only reason he wears pants is I don't think he's noticed. Like, he changes, like, if he ever looked down, it's like, Hulk, what about the pants? Pants? Oh, he probably ripped them off and go, oh, now Hulk's boys can breathe.
I'm going to quit this podcast. That's terrible.
Oh, come on. We're having fun.
Yeah.
Hulk just never notices he's wearing pants. You know, it's like.
Otherwise, he'd be mad about that, too, just like you.
Yeah.
Mortal
Otherwise,
enemy.
He'd run around in tiny whiteies or like the thing. Like, the thing wears little, like, little...
He wears, like, a blue Speedo, doesn't he?
Yeah, he wears a blue Speedo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's also distasteful.
What? He's made out of rocks.
I understand.
You don't want to see the thing without that blue Speedo.
So, are there clown groupies?
Yes. There are.
Do they look like Jack Kirby?
No. Well, no, maybe a few of them. I know the gator clowns in Florida scared the bejesus out of us. We're pulling into the next city in Florida. Gator towns. Gators are Florida. What city?
Gator clowns?
The football town. Team. Florida State University is in what city? I don't know.
Tampa?
Tampa. So it was Tampa.
Okay.
So they're
we're
called
guessing.
The.
We don't know that.
We'll just go with. We'll go with it.
Sadly, I know that.
Oh, well, you lived in Florida.
Yes.
Without your clothes.
Wait a minute.
On.
You
yes.
said gator clowns, right?
Yeah. So
okay, I can't get this image out of my head. Remember that movie, The Alligator People?
You've seen that painting on from Haunted Mansion where the girls on the high wire and the girls and the
yeah.
gators underneath there.
So but now I'm freaking myself out. There was a movie called The Alligator People that looked like those
yes.
little stuffed roadside alligators.
Yes.
But I'm seeing them wearing little pom pom hats and with like little yes red noses on them.
So what are the gator clowns?
So the gator clowns are a clown group. You know how magicians have
IBM and SAM?
IBM, SAM, mm-hmm. They have like groups. Well, clowns have like alleys, but they're known as the gator clowns. And they actually get the Ringling Brothers clowns to go have dinner with them. It's like a mini, it's like a one night convention. We eat with them in a hall. And then everybody donates money, and then however many clowns go, the clowns have to talk for about 10 minutes just about exploits or just clowning in general, and we split the pot.
Okay.
Wow.
But before, while we were getting into town, three of them jump on the train. They jumped on the train before it even stopped. So anytime there's someone that you don't know on the train... not cool, right? They're
yeah.
like, it's like somebody just walking off the street and coming into your house.
Yeah.
yeah.
So, two of the clowns held me back because they knew who they were.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Because I was like going to literally throw them off the
Punch
train.
Punch a hobo and throw them off the train.
Yes. but
Get
yes,
off my train, hobo.
That's one set of groupies. And then every once in a while.
So, they just want to hang with you, though.
They just want to hang with us. Because,
or are they also creeping like that?
A couple of them really
they're like
did.
You're Ringling.
Yes, exactly. So they were scary that way. And every once in a while you will meet a girl who has a fetish.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Lily's getting the
Uh-oh.
Eye.
Who does enjoy they do enjoy the company of
the
clowns.
Funny meat.
I grew up in outside, just outside of Tampa.
That's where the clowns
are? Every year for my birthday, I would go to the Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey Circus.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
It was one of those things. And I always loved the clowns. Mm-hmm. I loved the showgirls and all of that kind of stuff. But the clowns,
me
comedy
too.
Is such a turn on for me.
Mm-hmm.
And when we actually met and decided to go out, because he thought we should have dinner before we had sex. Old-fashioned that way. I called him up, and on his answering machine, it says, "You've reached funnyeddie.com, former Ringling," and my knees went weak. And I was like, no wonder I like him. He's like a clown clown. He's like funny. And yeah, so I wouldn't say I was a groupie, but it was like added bonus turn on.
There you
Absolutely.
Go.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. So there are.
Me.
Yeah.
That's
so yes, there were groupies in a way. Mm-hmm.
Yes. You know, something tells me though, because I mean, like, you know, you get crazies coming after you all the time.
My fans are very nice.
I'm not talking about you.
All six of them.
I am not talking about your fans. I'm talking about the crazies.
Those six people have kept me in business over a long time.
I am not talking about those six people that buy your stuff. I'm talking about the crazies, and I'm not going to talk about them in specifics on here. But it gets crazy.
Oh, please do.
There was. I'll give you one instance. May I give one instance of where
your fans are very nice?
My fans are very nice.
All right.
However, there were a couple that were kind of a little into some aspects of my writing a little too much, and I'd say this was, and I don't mean to paint everybody with the same brush, so, you know. But back when I was writing Tiny Toons, there were a couple of, that's when I first became aware that people...
Furries.
There were furries. Yeah. And
For those of you at home who don't know what furries are...
Well, furries are people who... when they quite a few of them, when they congregate for conventions, will dress in furry costumes. Just like for a superhero convention, somebody will dress as Batman or Superman. At a furry convention or an AnthroCon, as some of them are called, there is a con called AnthroCon.
Yeah, that's more celebratory. That's not as sexy though, like fetishy furry.
Well, they'll dress difference. In like an animal costume,
like a full mascot.
Like
full
a full mascot,
mascot
costume,
costume and have sex in those.
And
yeah.
have sex in them.
Yeah.
Like that.
He's like, where are they meeting?
I would pass out.
Right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. And yeah. so, well, there were some, one day back when I was working on Tiny Toons and I just started working on Batman, we were just kind of roughing that out. A group of guys came to my office and they knew somebody who was a storyboard artist at Warner Brothers, and there had been some sort of tenuous connection enough to get them into a tour walking around, and these guys really liked funny animals. Now it's not like animation fans. You talk to any animator like Jerry Beck or Eric Goldberg or guys like that.
Or Bruce Timm.
Even Bruce Timm. You know, they like funny animals. They like the characters. They like the cartoons. You know, and everything like that. But it doesn't go really beyond that. These are guys who really liked funny animals and really kind of got into their heads and their psyches and their sexual lives to a degree that, you know, I had an office full of guys and they all liked the stuff perhaps a bit too much. And I like cartoon animals. I like them a lot because they're a way of, like Aesop, you know, kind of examining the foibles of people. And
this is taking a long time. Tell us about the weirdo.
Well, okay.
It's too much.
Was Minerva part of this?
I had some model sheets from Tiny Toons, and I said, you guys want these? They started fighting over them, and there was like, they were actually like getting to the point where they were going to call each other names, like, you squirrel, you weasel, or I don't know, call each other, but they were really
call each
angry.
Other varmints.
They all wanted the girl varmint. They all wanted the girl model sheets.
That's the Yosemite Sam model sheets.
Wow. And they were really possessive over them, and finally one of them took them off and just Xeroxed himself a set of them, you know, it's like, and I was like... And here's the creepy part. And, you know, this,
finally.
Well, one of the guys used the instance that he had come to my office and met me as his entry to bother
a voice actor
on one of our shows and really bothered the hell out of them, and that got to be kind of a sticky thing for a long time. So, and I had to apologize to the voice actor and everything, and even though it wasn't really my fault. They called me about it and said, is this person a friend of yours? And I had to say, no, not really. You know, he came to my office once with a group of people, and then I met, it was like he used a connection to get to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that led to some trouble. And that happens occasionally, you know.
What color company were you with?
With the red unit.
Okay, now we were talking about the red unit versus the blue unit. Was one better than the other?
It depends who was on the who was performing with
because
the circus
guys,
at that time.
Yeah, that's fair.
Did they split up the animals like tigers and bears would be in red and lions and elephants and
well,
in
the main blue? Difference between the red unit and the blue unit, from what I understand, I may be wrong, but the blue unit always has a clown car.
Okay.
And the red unit always had Gunther Gable Williams.
Oh, he always had a different animal each show. Like he was with leopards one time, and then he had...
leopards. No lions. Lions are very difficult to train.
Okay.
They do have them, But if you have other animals that are just as cool, why not use them instead of using something else like a lion?
What is easier to train among the big cats, a leopard or a tiger?
A tiger, from what I understand.
Really?
Yes. And they shoot and they urinate backwards. They put their butts up against the fence and they shoot a stream probably about 20 feet.
Oh, I've just seen that like firsthand. Yeah.
I have too. So have they. No.
I was at there's a great tiger exhibit at the Honolulu Zoo. And the tiger, I saw him walking around and kind of making that motion. And I saw this family come. I should have said something.
No,
came running up to the fence. Hey, here's the tiger. And it's like, I don't know if he's going to do it or not. I don't know for sure. Oh, he just did it. He got them all. It was amazing. It was awesome. Like a high pressure hose.
It is. It's insane. Wow. And then it smells like popcorn. If you get peed on, it smells like popcorn and you can't get rid of that smell.
Wow.
And the reason I made the ring curb guys, the workers, actually stop doing what they're doing and give me an applause. They were applauding me because I'm carrying, we had track gags, 30-second gags, just, you know, hitting hard, funny stuff, pick up everything, go to another spot on the track, and then do it again for people who didn't see you.
Right.
So I'm carrying this big ironing board, and I'm running to my next spot, and I see the cat, and I know what he's going to do. I drop my stuff. I'm still going forward. I do a front roll right as he peed in the spot that I was in.
Wow.
So I do the front roll. I look up and I look everywhere and all the ring curb guys are just like, yeah, because I did not get peed on.
Yeah. Wow.
So my props did and they stunk.
Like popcorn.
Popcorn.
Yeah. Forever. Wow.
But no, the animals are amazing. And like I said, I told you, right? The 2 years I was on the road, I never saw any mistreatment of animals.
That's right. Yeah.
And I was looking and I was watching and I was waiting. Uh-huh. Nothing bad ever happened. They do not beat the animals. They do beat their children.
Yeah, okay. Which is fine. Yeah.
Their own children, not the animals' children.
No. Yes.
What's the most exotic animal that Ringling Brothers had while you were there? Like, did they have like, in past on posters, I've seen gorillas and polar bears and things like that. Did they have anything that kind of rivaled that?
The 2 years that I was on, alpacas, camels, tigers, an ostrich the first year I was on.
Oh.
And we were dancing to Get Jiggy With It with Will Smith.
Wow.
And then...
And the ostrich sang that for you?
No, there was a huge ostrich egg, and all the clowns were surrounding it, and I was Sherlock Holmes, and we're trying to find clues. Then the egg opened up, the ostrich came out, and I forgot her name, but she was gorgeous. But she's riding the ostrich, and then we all danced to Get Jiggy With It. We had no clue why. It was just what the performance director wanted us to do.
That's a really well-written sketch.
Yes. No idea. No idea.
But I bet the audience loved
it. But the ostrich, I believe, would have been the most unusual. It was foul.
You look at old posters of Barnum and Bailey, and, you know, it's everything from...
Like that pun.
You know, like animal, like hippos doing tricks, which is impossible to teach a hippo to do anything other than kill a person.
Yes.
Yes.
Or but, eat pumpkins.
Yes, there you go. That
which I have never been allowed to see.
That's insane. Yeah.
They took the hippos out of the LA Zoo and I couldn't see them this year. I was very sad.
Why? They
I don't know. They aren't there. I haven't seen them for like the last 6 months.
Wow.
They didn't have a proper visa and they had to get deported.
Yeah.
Well, okay.
Yeah, they eat them like popcorn. They're just all nice.
Yeah. But that in the old zoo, circus posters, you know, like they have Gargantua the gorilla, and he's like throwing natives over his shoulders, and and then there's bears serving tea and roller skating and stuff like that, and it's like how much of that stuff? None of that stuff could have been real. It was all must have been like visual hyperbole to.
I'm sure at some point they nailed bears to a bike and made them ride around.
Oh, no! I think so. Yeah.
Horrible. Oh, you like it?
Or elephants serving, like you said, tea, or riding a humongous tricycle.
Yeah.
I got an iPhone cover from from you guys. Thank you so much.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, one of those elephants is wearing like a full suit with a straw hat
and the elephant blanket. Yeah, the elephant blankets that they wear are over 100 pounds.
Wow.
Just with all the sequins and with everything that's on the elephant blankets.
But that's like nothing to them.
No, yeah. No, not at all. But they used to sell advertisement, you know, in the beginning of the last century.
Oh, yeah, where they would march through town and you could advertise on the side of an elephant. Yeah.
Isn't that awesome?
That's cool.
Pretty cool.
So what were your cherry... And I have a bunch of questions for you, Miss. But what were your cherry pie gigs?
When Mark Geipel, the general manager for the Red Unit, found out I was a Marine,
mm-hmm.
he had me drive a fifth wheel, which is just a truck, a dually, you know, with the four tires in the back and the two in the front.
Yep.
Big Ford F-350, hauling a trailer, like a 25-foot trailer. And I was responsible for getting that trailer to the next city. So Sunday night, we usually have three shows. By the end of middle of the third show, everything's pretty much packed.
Right.
So once the curtains close, I have to hightail it, get in the truck, and drive the performer who was a 16-year-old boy crazy girl.
Mm-hmm.
I was basically driving that car and babysitting.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Making sure that she was...
In the car.
In the car and behaving.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
So once he found out I was a Marine, he trusted me with mm-hmm. that.
What a fool.
And it was cool. And it was $110 every time from city to city.
Oh, wow.
So one time it was, 1,500 miles that we had to drive? That was $110.
Hey.
And another time from the Forum to Staples was $110. Mm-hmm. So that was cool.
It probably ended up working out to a decent wage when you looked at it overall of time. No. Never.
No, no, not at all. But it was all right. Mm-hmm. So that's one cherry pie. And then what's that?
What was the teenage girl's job in the circus? I got.
She was
ask.
An animal trainer. She actually had. She did the black and white act. So she had the horses, black horses, and white horses.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
And it's a Liberty Act. What am I saying? Black and white act. It's black and white. But Liberty Act. So no reins on the horses. It was just all verbal cues and sounds.
Wow.
And I got yelled at too because I'm a whip cracker. And I'm cracking the whip in the alley while Gunther Gable Williams' son, Mark Oliver Gable, was training the Tigers. And I did not know that certain whip cracks. Let them know what to do with their sound cues.
Oh.
So I'm cracking the whip and his wife comes by and she goes, "Who's doing that?" I go, "I am." She goes, "Stop." I go, "Why?" "They're sound cues. They're doing different things and Mark can get hurt. So please stop."
Oh,
and
wow.
I was like, "I am so sorry." So I did not know.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, could have got him killed.
Yeah. Oh, that would have been a drag.
Oh yeah, they might.
Maybe
put me
literally
in there.
If they got their teeth in him. Oh.
No.
But it
no.
didn't happen, so it's funny. It's funny because it's not true.
Oh yes, Roy.
Yes.
Yeah. Ooh, oh. Roy. You know what? I saw
also owned by Feld Entertainment.
Oh, Siegfried
Those
and Roy.
Yes. Animals or Siegfried and Roy themselves?
Siegfried and Roy were also owned by Feld. Oh. Feld Entertainment is a circus, the ice shows, and Siegfried and Roy.
Wow, that's some big
they have, yeah, they do Disney on Ice, I believe. Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
I saw a Halloween costume, a terribly unfortunate Halloween costume the year Roy got attacked. Someone had gone to Staples and had a badge pull. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Like where you pin it to your pants and you pull your badge out and then it sucks mm-hmm. back up. They took one of those and put it on their collar and had a little white tiger attached to it so they could hold it out and it would go back up to their neck. And so what are you? And they said, "I'm Roy." And I was like, "That's too soon."
Oh,
it's never too soon for me, though, because I'm still laughing about it all these years later. It was great.
Oh, it's funny.
Yeah, there you go. Next year, Lily.
Yep.
Get it. what were your other cherry pie gigs?
Moving the trunks from the flatbeds that were on the trains.
Mm-hmm.
So we had a wagon. I would drive a Harlan. A Harlan is what you see on the tarmac at the airports. So
okay.
It's kind of like a Jeep, but it doesn't have a roll cage or anything like that.
Yeah.
And they're heavy, and they can pull a lot of weight. So we would pull the wagons off of the flatbeds and then take the wagons via the Harlans to the arenas.
Okay.
So I would do that one. I think that was like $35.
Mm-hmm.
And then another one I did was I used to get the alley's trunks. Everybody would close their trunks, and then we would put the trunks into the wagons and do that. And sometimes I would miss it because we would have to drive.
Uh-huh.
So it just depended on what we were going to do, how fast and how hard we were going to hit the next
Does the circus
city.
Mostly travel by
truck, or do they still travel by train?
Always by train.
Always by train.
Is there a reason for that?
Yes. It is the largest privately owned train, I believe, in the world. And they already have the cars. So and it's cheaper that way too.
Yeah.
Any other way and it would be too expensive. Yep. Train is the way to go, and it always has been.
I remember one year it was Sunday, the last day of Comic-Con in San Diego, and it was people were packing up, and it was like 3:30, 4 o'clock. So the convention's mostly over, you know, they're breaking down the dealer's room. And as I was walking back to the hotel, Barnum and Bailey is coming in on the train, because the train goes right through town, right there by the convention center. And I thought, one circus packs up and another one comes in, the real circus. And it was fascinating to watch it come in, because a lot of the windows had that sort of the metallic look to them. You could tell like those must have been the sleeping cars, so people could sleep, or they were keeping it dark for whatever reason and things like that. But I was just fascinated by watching it come in.
Mm-hmm. There's nothing like seeing the train.
Yeah.
You just see Barnum and Bailey on this silver bullet.
Yeah.
And then the first five cars are like, oh, this is so cool. And you're at the stop sign.
Yeah.
And then it's a mile long. And by the end, people are flipping you off and you're just cracking up.
Move it, clowns! God, it's like, how many chimps can you carry in that damn thing?
I know. And then the giraffe incident from 32. We don't have giraffes on the show anymore.
Why? Do you have it decapitated?
I'm joking, but it's very uncomfortable for them to travel. Yeah. So that's the main reason why they don't have giraffes on the road anymore.
It looks so cute and Dumbo, they just snap in place,
Did I tell the... We had a family friend that was decapitated, and I asked the stupidest question I've ever asked in my life. My mother called and said, so-and-so, I don't want to say his name on here, so-and-so has been, was decapitated at work today. And I said, is he going to be all right? And she was quiet for a minute, and she said, no, honey, his head came off. He's dead. And I went, oh, God, like, it took you, social convention, I didn't hear her, I mean? It didn't, sink in. I was like, is he going to be all right? No, honey. His head came off. He's dead. And I said, oh. Good story, Misty. So what were the best of
Way to bring it down.
Nah, Jenga. We were just talking about Jenga conversation pieces and how, sometimes my friend Renee was talking about how some things that come out should stay internal. And this is her sign for stop talking. That needs to go in. I'm making a circle on my forehead. Does it to me all the time. She's like, stop talking. Internal monologue. That one's coming out. Stop it in its tracks. Just bring it back in. So this is the, if I do it, just go and I'll stop because I know what's happening. Usually I won't stop.
Hobart has a question.
Who?
Hobart.
What is it?
Hobart. He wanted to know if there were ever Australian animals in the circus, kangaroos.
I guess
and
I was
like
done.
That. No, well, Hobart had a quick question.
I guess I'm just done talking this fine.
No, well, he wanted to ask. I saw him.
Yeah.
I mean, do they have things like boxing kangaroos and everything like that?
The Tom and Jerry cartoon?
Or, Sylvester cartoons, there's always a baby kangaroo that escapes from the circus.
Oh, Sylvester.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Not when I was on. They have before, but not the years I was.
I guess they put a ban on Australian animals 30 or 40 years ago. You can't get them out of the country anymore. And so...
Why?
They're rare. They're going extinct, And
well, yeah, the Tasmanian devils are biting each other on the face and giving each other cancer.
Also, you can't really get a koala to jump through a flaming
really
circle.
You don't get cancer from a bite on the face.
Tasmanian devils do,
yeah.
What? I swear to God.
They're going extinct. They spread this facial cancer. They bite each other and it spreads this disease. It's horrible. Even immune ones that they brought in to establish colonies have all broken out in the facial disease. They'll be extinct in 20 years.
Oh, wow.
If it's not controlled and they're isolating them, the ones that don't have cancer, they're trying to get them to breed, or the ones that seem like they tend to be immune, because there's a greeting that they do where they chew on each other's faces and it's making them sick.
Yeah.
And they're literally getting facial cancers from biting each other on the face.
I never knew.
That's going around the Magic Castle too, so be careful.
Oh, okay.
I would believe.
Yeah, I know. So everybody I knew from the castle was sick. Max, I was supposed to go to lunch with Max and Max Maven, and he said, I can't come, I'm sick. And Trisha Lasky was supposed to come over. She said, the castle crud is what I call it. It just goes around.
And I go there all the time. I'm the mayor.
Yeah. Hey.
So it's marsupial face cancer that's bringing down the castle.
The circus?
No, the castle.
Oh, yeah. It probably is.
Okay, probably is.
Yeah. That's okay. So Australian animals. What was the worst cherry pie gig, yours or anybody's? Like, what was the one that everyone
the
was like?
The hardest one, the most, like, physically demanding one was the elephant track.
You because, did that one, didn't
no,
you?
No, no, no. I didn't do that. That was just... The Russians did it, like the aerialists, because these guys were just big. And they were the catchers. The catchers don't have to fly. So they're the guys who just bulk up and hang upside down and catch everybody and throw mm-hmm. them, which is awesome. But they're the guys who just had... That was the hardest one. And then the elephant tubs has a certain neck to it.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're a smaller diameter on top than on the bottom. So you put them up on the bottom and you start twirling them. And you're rolling them on the floor, but those things weigh about 120 pounds each. Whoa, so if you lose wow. control of it, bad things can happen.
Ew.
And then Detroit was a trip. The boxer Joe Louis.
Yes.
Is that it?
Joe Louis Arena. Yes, sir.
We could not use our own forklifts because it is union rules and everything.
Oh, yeah.
We had to sit in the forklift with a guy that's as big as me now, because I'm like 275 and 5'10".
Yeah.
So big guy like that, sharing one space, drinking Wild Turkey out of a little 7-Up container, because I guess that's what they do. Unions are awesome.
Do anything.
So yeah, we couldn't do anything. We couldn't lift anything. And by the end of the night, there were a bunch of accidents.
Yeah, I've heard
that. Well, there's a knack to doing a lot of that stuff that mm-hmm. you guys are used to doing, and these guys are going, no, we got it. We got to do this. We got it. We got it. It's like, okay, but I could tell you how.
We tell them, but, you know,
yeah.
between 1 second and the next, you know, a little low. Oh.
Yeah, exactly.
And there goes that trunk.
Exactly. Yeah, it's like, I'm the guy who moves that thing, but I can't move that thing because my supervisor is not here, and I can't move anything unless my supervisor is here. He called in sick, so I'm here making money. My supervisor's making money on disability or on sick pay, but we can't move in your thing.
Yeah, well, we had a film director friend who they couldn't plug something in because the electrician had to be there to supervise the union guy who had to plug it in,
yeah.
and the supervisor to all of them was asleep in a truck somewhere and they couldn't find him. So three guys were standing around looking at a plug.
Yeah.
And all they needed to do was plug it in.
Yeah, but you can't do that.
Nuts.
Exactly.
Yeah, nuts.
And then the only thing you can do is write up the guy and submit it to grievances and nothing.
And nothing's going to come of it.
You're gone within 5 days, and mm-hmm. it doesn't really...
Yeah.
I used to sell power tools, and we had the same issues in Las Vegas. We had to wait for certain people to come
yeah.
so they can unload everything or plug things in. It yeah. was just, I had no idea this happens. I'm like, wow.
I think unions are kind of, are basically a good idea, but I just think
yeah.
there's almost like no give and take with them, you know? It's yeah. like,
well, you know. There is. When I was on tour with, actually, interestingly enough, I did a couple shows with Jonathan and Charlotte where this applied. I used to assist Jonathan Pendragon and Charlotte when they were working together years and years ago and worked with them as a magician too. But at one of the places we went, their tour manager pulled me aside and said, here's a little something you may or may not know. When you go on tour and you know you're going to a union house, you bring what we call a bag of lettuce. And I said, what is it? And he said, it's a bag of 20s. And he said, and you walk around and you feed all the little bunnies lettuce. And it seems that if you're nice to them, they'll look the other way.
Uh-huh.
And they'll kind of let you get away with things. And I'm not saying that everywhere will do that. And I'm not saying that's honest or dishonest, but I am saying it works. Because I used it. I used that several times, and it works. And more than anything else, if you're a decent person and show people gratitude,
mm-hmm.
they can be yeah. jerks, or they can look the other way, or they can help you accomplish what you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah.
And it's like, we need to plug this in. What? I don't know. It was plugged in when I got here, and all of a sudden they're like looking up going, now, because I can't control it if I didn't sit. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And so,
mm-hmm.
and as long as nothing bad happens and they weigh their options, and I mean, people can be decent or not, depending, and if, you know, whether or not they're being directly supervised and all that stuff. So the hardest gigs were the Might is Right gigs, essentially. The cherry pie gigs, the hardest ones were the ones that took really tough physical strength. Is that how they were paid, too? Was it how much you would be
yes.
exhausted
so
is what they paid?
You could get anywhere from $25 to $40.
A day?
Or
a load-in?
A load-in or a load-out.
Okay.
And it's always one or the other. You know, you get paid for each individual one.
Yeah.
The ballerinas, we had 14 classically trained ballerinas from Brazil.
Wow.
Doing all the choreographed dances and everything for the circus because it was less expensive to get them instead of using American workers.
That makes sense.
They only had two American females, and the rest were all from Brazil. And the girls would send more than half their money back home because huge, you know, pay difference.
Yeah, mm-hmm. sure.
So they were pulling cables is what I was getting at. They would just pull, I don't know how many miles of cables, but over up in the tress. Mm-hmm. The tress is huge. If you ever look up at the circus and you realize what is actually hanging above everybody, it's just all the cables, all the audio, visual, just anything you can imagine. It's insane. So yeah, so they got that.
And you guys would have to bring in all the computer systems and stuff to run all that. And I mean, ideally,
because they have a live band.
Yeah.
And then they have the techs for the live band.
And then you've got all those pals with the special lights that come in and make you guys look so awesome because so much of it is lighting and so much of it is.
Wow.
It's insane.
Holy Christmas. Wow. Wow.
Do you have some questions for Lily?
I have a whole list of questions for Eddie. And yes, I have a ton of questions for Lily. Do you want to move over to Lily?
How about we mix it up a little bit?
Because I was going to say we could do a whole show with just Lily.
Yeah, yeah. But let's get Lily in there for a few questions.
All right.
That sounds good.
Yeah. Who did you admire growing up, Lily, burlesque? And first of all, when did you start getting into burlesque performance, both admiring it, what piqued your interest, how did the whole thing start for you?
It's really weird because I didn't know it was burlesque. I used to see my dad's Playboys.
Mm-hmm.
Growing up, and mm-hmm. I would steal them, mm-hmm. and then my brothers would get beaten because they were missing.
Nice. Now, did you steal them because you wanted to be like the girls, or because you found them appealing? Yes, to everything.
I found it amazing because my family was religious, but not crazy religious, uh-huh. and so my mom went to church. My dad, unfortunately, was a drunk and didn't go to church.
Okay.
And so
there's drunks in church too.
Yeah. Well, my father was orphaned and raised by priests, so there was a whole bunch of issues there as well.
Uh huh.
But I would find it fascinating because in the house and in school and in church, you're taught this is how you're supposed to be. And then I would see these magazines that had these beautiful women in them naked. And I was like, but they're not ashamed. It mm-hmm. was, at the time I didn't really know what that meant, but I was like, they just look happy and they're naked and they're pretty.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And then I started finding old trading cards for burlesque.
Oh, yeah.
And I would steal those from my uncles.
Uh-huh.
That's a Dave Stevens route. That's how he got into it.
She probably knows who Dave Stevens is.
Yeah, I know who Dave Stevens is. My first ex-husband and I had a beautiful print or a beautiful painting of his in our house. Yeah.
We just got go ahead.
Yes. Yes. So anyway, so I just ran across all of that. And then I started watching a lot of musicals with my mom. We'd sit and watch TV. And, you know, I grew up watching Gypsy, not realizing she was a stripper. She was just this glamorous woman.
She was a celebrity.
Who danced, and so you don't really make that focus. Mm-hmm. Then you find Betty Page, and it's like you don't really understand, but she's, again, not prideful, but not ashamed of being naked. So it was like a real strong influence as I was growing up. And then one day it kind of all connected at a garage sale when the wife of the husband was like, what is that and why are you selling that to a 14-year-old? Uh-huh. You know? So then it was kind of like, well, maybe this is bad. I don't know. Because I didn't have the internet back then.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, where now, you go on, you do a search for burlesque or neo-burlesque, and it's like, oh, tons of reference materials. There weren't magazines back then that explained it other than, there was the dancer with the legs in short, and there was the 44 double D, and there was Evangeline, the oyster girl. You didn't really know what they were doing because it was just pictures of them. Mm-hmm. But they were dancers. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how I got introduced to it. And then I ran across some stag films at one point, and I was like, oh, these women are like dancing and taking their clothes off. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And so, that's really how I got introduced to it.
I remember my family and I, my siblings, we grew up near San Francisco. And when we would drive into the city to go to my aunt's house, we would drive along Broadway.
Yep.
And so there would be the Condor, El Condor, and Big Al's, and Carol Doda, and everything like that. We'd see, like the lights in the seamy part of North Beach. And then it would be like, girls, what are the girls doing in there? And then they put a girl outside dancing in a cage in front, and it would be sort of like,
don't look at that, kids. We'll drive faster. It's like, Dad's looking at it. But there'd be a girl out there in a miniskirt dancing it looked like a giant lantern outside as a way of drawing people in. And it's sort of like, drive by the girl again. That's kind of interesting.
Yes.
And
I like those boots.
What? Well, yeah. And then it just, yeah. Nancy Sinatra. These boots are made for walking.
Oh,
yeah.
His first crush.
When I saw that video, it's sort of like, you know, and I heard that ding, 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 ding. It's like, wow, this is
kind of... I have a tingling. What is that?
Watch this. Yeah, all right. Yeah, so.
I hope someone invents a VCR soon.
Well, that was the very first, rock video, and I remember seeing that on this, God, it was like a Soundies thing. They actually had these, they were trying to make them like novelty booths where you'd go in and you pay like a couple of quarters and you'd see a rock band, a rock video, the very first of them in the late 60s. And you would see them in like video, game arcades and shooting galleries and stuff
like
that.
It's like updated Nickelodeon.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
And then Eddie Gordetsky actually got a lead on about 8 of them and was shopping them around a few years ago and asked if we wanted to buy one. And it's just like, you know, $9,000. I couldn't, you know, justify.
Well, you could have. It's just where are you going to put it?
Yeah, and you know,
next to your bear with the shaman hat.
Awesome
bear with a shaman hat.
But every video they made at that time, you can get on one disc. You know, if you want to hunt them down, and you know, and we have a funky old TV.
It's sort of like a return on investment thing.
Yeah, if you've got a game room or something like that, or you're into collecting, you know, that stuff.
We were just, you guys just got a meme machine.
Yeah, we got a Neo Geo arcade cabinet, which has the one slot where you can change out the video game with a different Neo Geo cartridge.
Oh, nice.
So there's about 160 different games that you can just plug into it and play any that you want. You don't need to change out the entire board.
Where do you live?
That's awesome.
Just down the street.
And there's another one where they put every controller known to man, from guns to the centipede roller to an Atari thing, set of this just one big arcade game, and it's loaded with everything they could find. I just hit my unicorn horn. And it made me a unicorn horn, and I forget it's so organic on my head.
I forget
that it's there, as real unicorns do all the time, I'm sure.
Unicorn Wednesday.
Right! They do in every game, from like Centipede to Asteroid to Zaxxon on Coleco, like everything is there. And the nice thing is they can put that in a very small hard drive now, because that stuff, you know, all the 8-bit stuff, I mean, it's like you could wear it in an earring and, you know, and have all of those games in something this size of a very small, you know, the size of your thumbnail, and it's all just in there. Mm-hmm. So it just becomes a question of the hardware to manipulate and operate it. But they put it in one cabinet with a super high resolution screen, and you can play everything. It's kind of cool.
Nice.
And a lot of hackers and stuff will build them for themselves, or computer programmers and stuff will build them for themselves. And they have everything in their house. So the reason I brought that up is, going back to what you were talking about with the pseudo Nickelodeon machines, you can either buy all of those movies and have them on one disc, or you can buy do I want the sit-down Pac-Man from the pizza place that I used to go to? Or do I want them all in this one cabinet? And so you go back and forth, and it's like, wow, I could have all of them for $6,000 or this one for $12, but it's, you know, nostalgic and the real deal. So, I mean,
there comes a lot of pleasure in owning the original, whether it's something old and a technology that is clearly out of date, but it's in good shape. And
like
you can
your Bop-A-Bear toys, your Dino the Dinosaur, too.
Dino the Dinosaur, or player piano rolls, you know,
I love those.
Yeah.
One of the
wax cylinders, too. I just love those.
One of the things
at the castle. They've got one of the original wax cylinders of Harry Houdini speaking.
So
did you know that?
No, I did not.
In the castle archives, in the seance room in my office. There's an Edison phonograph machine.
Yeah.
And they have the cylinder. You can actually play Harry Houdini going, "Ladies and gentlemen." He's got a really high pitched. He was very tiny.
When we did Tower Prep,
eyes of blue.
We had the kids meeting in this observatory where they put a lot of old junk, and they really did a great job making the observatory. And they filled it full of old eclectic stuff. And there was this wall they found, and it was filled with nothing but old piano rolls. For player pianos,
wow.
And I was looking through some of them one day because I'd I've always wanted to get a player piano, and then I was looking. Some of them were really old, from the 30s, and some of them were from the 70s, because they still make them, unbelievably, yeah. for mm-hmm. piano. So it's like I'm looking at this one old box inside. It's like theme from Star Wars.
Oh.
Piano roll.
Where is it?
You know?
Did you bring it home?
No, because oh. we
and
only
I
had
got a DaVita.
Yeah, yeah. We only had the old piano rolls. We
it's
didn't
a
have
huge
the.
Roll.
We didn't have anything to play it on. So you know.
Ice castles. Get this out.
Yeah.
So,
theme from Shaft for player piano.
Oh yeah!
Oh, bring on the Blaxploitation player piano rolls, please. Yes, yes, that's yeah. the name of this one.
I mean, you know, the thing was like, all right, well, a few years ago, Kevin Smith had a house in New Jersey that had the cellar that just was sort of like this amusement area where he had a soda fountain and a game room and everything. And right. so, if we had something like that, where it was just a big game room, I would probably get a few things like that, like player pianos and stuff, just to have them around, because you enjoy. I enjoy them, you know.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And like well, that. And it's fun.
Yeah.
So let's talk about when Lily started getting real sexy.
I like the games.
From, yeah.
I like the game talk too.
Yeah,
I
mean, we
but
can
it, it's like that
games,
novel.
Yeah,
it's like that novelty that kind of comes around to at least
well,
when
back.
I became aware of burlesque was that sort of like glitzy. You know, kind of seamy, kind of cool, mid-60s to mid-70s, North Beach type thing, where it was risque and bad. You shouldn't look, you know, if you grew
yeah.
up in a Catholic family, to woohoo, look, that looks like fun if you were a normal person.
Mm-hmm. So, what my question was to you is, like, okay, so I understand, like, how it started waking up in you. You know, like, it starts turning on
so
the
lights in your
brain.
So when did I actually dance? Is that
yeah.
what you're... Oh,
when did you
well,
actually
stop.
Dance? And, like, how did that develop in you? Like, because you were about 14 and you were already actively seeking stuff out on your own for yourself. You were already starting
yes.
to collect this stuff and learn about these women.
Yes, collecting... You know, I watched Madonna, saw the influences of burlesque
absolutely.
There as well. Didn't really realize that's what was happening. But uh-huh. Moved cross-country a couple times. Finally ended up here in Los Angeles, which is where I wish I would have come when I was 18, despite mm-hmm. my mm-hmm. family telling me, you know... Don't do that.
It's the Sodom and Gomorrah of America.
So I got here. I was 37 at the time, and the neo-burlesque resurgence had started.
Okay.
And I was in radio at the time. I was doing a show with my now second ex-husband.
You have a great voice.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And there was an ad on Craigslist, and he goes, don't you, like, collect burlesque? He goes, somebody's teaching classes. You should go take that. It would be funny. And I'm like, oh, yeah, let's move to Los Angeles, where you open up LA Weekly and it tells you that vaginal rejuvenation is necessary because even your vagina is not good enough here. I'm 37 with real boobs. I'm not getting on stage and taking my clothes off. That ship passed. But he's like, no, just take it. We'll talk about it. It'll be fun. So I was like, okay. I went and took the class, and it was amazing. It's a very DIY art, so you get to make your own costumes. You get to devise your own... you know, storylines, your character arc, you get to create everything about it from start to finish.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say you get to grow up and be the fireman and the princess and the
absolutely.
Anything you want to be, you can do in burlesque. It was such an amazing thing. So I took the class, thought I'll never perform. My graduating class performed, and I was actually out of town, like at Macworld or something at the time.
Uh-huh.
And came back, and the teacher said, you really need to do this. Come do it. So I was like, okay,
fine. Do you remember who your teacher was?
I do.
If you don't want to say, you don't have to.
No, that's okay.
Okay.
Her name is Bella Beretta. She was with the Gun Street Girls, which was one of the very first neo-burlesque troupes. She went
okay.
out on tour with rock bands and stuff like that, doing okay. you know, glorified go-go and stripping is what they were doing.
Cool.
So I took the class, went over to what is now a friggin' Citibank, I think. It's the
Chase.
Was the Derby. It's a Chase now. It was the beautiful
oh, that
Derby
was the very
on
first
Las Vegas.
Place you performed
the
in
Brown
LA
Derby.
Was,
I
was
also
the Derby,
performed
yeah.
at the Brown
so,
Derby.
So such
yeah.
an amazing place.
Yeah.
The whole, you know, the history, it just really made me feel like it was amazing.
Yeah.
And I got up to get ready to perform. And do you remember that there was like the little dressing room area that
yes.
you could use? And
yeah.
then the other door went outside.
Yes.
So I watched like this 22-year-old take her clothes off in front of me, and I'm thinking, you're going to take your bra off, your boobs are going to fall, and everybody's going to go, ha, like in Carrie, and laugh at you. And I was like, I don't know if I can do this. So I started to go from where the dressing room was to the door. And Bella actually went, I think we have a runner. And two other burlesque dancers came up behind me, and they're like, you can do this, it's okay. And she said my name, and I went up on stage, and... it was like bump, grind, you know, ta-da. I took my bra off and
yeah.
I finished it. And the audience was applauding, and I was like, this is amazing. And then I said, get the fuck off the stage now. And I ran off like a crazy woman. I have video of it, and I'm literally sprinting off stage with my boobs flapping.
I want to see this.
And it was the best experience of my life. The only thing I can say, it was like when people say they jumped out of a plane, uh-huh. and the adrenaline rush lasts for 3 days. That's yeah. what uh-huh. I felt like. And I was just like, I can't, this is addictive. It was like crack. I was like, this is a... It's amazing. It's everything yeah. I ever thought it could be and more.
Yeah.
And so every chance I could, I'd be like, hey, I'm going to hire somebody for $200 to cover me at work so I can go dance for $25. Mm-hmm. I mean, because it was just that amazing. And it was the first time that I'd ever really... I had big boobs in high school, so I didn't really have a lot of friends. Mm-hmm. It was always, you know, the boys were like, oh, I had sex with her, and the girls were like, she's a whore. And, you know, I wasn't.
Uh-huh.
But it was the first time where, like, girls would come up behind you and they'd be like, oh, your seam isn't straight. And they'd fix your seam and they'd slap you on the ass and they'd go, Papa Pasty, have a great time. So it was the first time at 37 where I was like, wow, girls are nice to me, too. They're supportive. And they're treating
you healthy, yeah.
Yeah, and so it's been the best experience that I think I've ever had in my life. And
One of the things I've heard is, like, the dancers say is it's very empowering.
It is. I mean, it won't fix Daddy Touched Me empowering.
Yes.
But it will definitely fix there are things about me I don't like, because you really have to accept yourself. You really have to look at your body and go, here's the good parts, here's the bad parts. How do I have fun with the good parts and make them really cool and kind of hide the bad parts that maybe I don't like? But I mean, for me, the best thing for me is like somebody will come up and they'll go, it's really nice to see real boobs.
Mm.
And you just kind of go, oh, I touched one person in the audience, you know? Or you'll see a young guy after the show come up and go, I forgot how sexy women are. Because, I mean, you can see vaginal exams online.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
You know, you can turn on YouTube or, RedTube. And, you know, in 15 seconds, you've jacked off and you're done and the sex experience has ended.
Yeah.
But with burlesque, it's that whole journey and that whole, you know, up and down foreplay with a little bit of payoff at the end. And then you get to go home with your spouse or your girlfriend or your boyfriend and, you know.
And release the
tension. Do that kind of stuff if that's what it is. I mean, for me, it's still a lot more entertainment than anything else with a little bit of cheeky nudity in it. But it just really lets you reconnect with the whole woman as one sexual being as opposed to just tits and ass.
Well, and what's nice about it is it's totally up to the performer what flavor she will be.
Absolutely.
You know, like it's complete. I mean, yes, you have reviews and you put one together and we'll ask you about it in a second. But like I've seen everything from I'm taking everything off to this diamond G-string just to turn you people on and so that I can leave and know you're all going to masturbate in my image so I can have your energy.
That's awesome.
That's one thing. Absolutely. I mean, Anton LaVey's teaching says if you can get them to do it, they're giving you juice, you know, so literally.
Yep.
But the other, you know, all the way down to I do this act as a gorilla and I, you know, take all my clothes off and then, you know, like the whole thing culminates and just, this is just what I do. Like I'm a gorilla that takes off its clothes down to a gorilla suit for comedic purposes. I have seen one of the sexiest burlesque routines I have ever seen in my whole life was an escape act. And I saw it. I don't know if I've ever told you about this. I was telling Max about it just the other day and he was, and I said, man, I watched this girl and she was so good. I cannot remember her name, but it was in Nashville. And I was in Nashville. I can find out her name, and I should, because, I mean, it was just so sexy. But I was hosting the show, and I came out and did, you know, like a little bit of singing and a little bit of magic and stuff. And Eric the Goon, the guy who draws the goon, Eric Powell had put together an entire burlesque evening because he's a huge fan. Mm-hmm. And his girlfriend, Samantha, Sam, is they're both active in the burlesque scene, but also she's a roller derby girl. So, and those.
There's a lot of crossover.
There's a lot of crossover there. So he had put together this whole thing and he had Roxy DeLight and Angie Pontani in.
Roxy is fucking phenomenal.
She is great.
And Angie's fantastic too, don't get me wrong, but Roxy DeLight, it's like, man, you talk about wheelhouse for me.
Yeah.
Everything about her is fucking gorgeous.
Yeah, she is. She is really, and she knows.
Funny, and she's smart, and she's nerdish, and she's just pure sex on stage at the same time. It's,
Well, and she always tells a story, and she always has character. It's always well-rounded and three-dimensional, and I mean, she's three-dimensional in every best way.
Yeah,
you know?
She's amazing.
Yeah, she's really good. They were both great. Neither one of them did this routine. This woman came out, and I can't remember her name, and she came out in a man's white button-down shirt and a pair of fishnets, and she was handcuffed to a chair like she'd been kidnapped there, and brought her arms around in a full extension and ran the handcuffs down the back of her fishnetted leg and leaned forward and very slowly dropped the key out of her own mouth.
Ah, oh, beautiful.
And just kind of brought it back up and undid herself. And it was extraordinarily empowering. And there's got to be video of it somewhere online.
Oh, I'm sure.
But I walked out and I was just, I had nothing. I walked out and I literally looked at the audience and said, that was so sexy. I've got nothing. Let's see what the next one has. And I just walked off the stage. There was nothing I could say. And I broke the tension because the audience was like, yeah. And I came out and I was like, yeah. And they were like, thank you for saying it. You know what I mean? Like, it was just remarkable. And what's remarkable is, never took a thing off.
Yeah.
Never took a thing off. Kept the shirt on the whole time. All she did was escape from handcuffs that she probably put on herself, you know, like according to the way that it went. But it was just a really powerful metaphor. And the tension was so well built. And she was so well built. And she was so talented and flexible because there's so much technique.
Yeah.
That goes into it too. For some of them. Some of them are tremendous actors. Some of them choose to bring that out. Some of them are tremendous dancers. Some of them are gymnasts. Some of them are just, you know, just sexy and they just use that. But you have to be all of those things.
You do now. I mean, back in the 40s and 50s, it was mostly glove and gown was the burlesque headliners. That's all they did was bump and grind.
Okay.
And then you'd have your hula hoop acts. You'd have your tap dancers. You'd have your magicians. You'd have your singers. You'd have nowadays the hula hoop dancer is the burlesque dancer taking her clothes off. Right. The aerialists are the ones taking. I mean, the bar is so high now with performance. It's amazing. I mean, even just in the 9 years I've been involved, I've watched it change and evolve 3 or 4 times with the innovations that are happening in burlesque.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's true. I mean, you can be the heavy dancer. You can be the comedic piece, like a Carol Burnett type kind of performer.
Mm-hmm.
They're all fantastic and wonderful. And that's what makes burlesque so amazing.
Yep. I saw another girl at Triptease in Santa Monica.
Where you used to host.
Yeah, I used to. Well, I didn't host it. I performed there.
Oh, that's right.
But she came out and she went by Honey, I'm a Home.
Oh, that's a dear friend of mine. Yeah.
Yeah, she's
you know, she
wonderful.
Was
wonderful.
She was the lead clown in Zumanity in Las Vegas for a while.
Sure.
Yeah.
Wow.
She's now at the Royal Academy in London.
Wow.
Taking acting classes.
She
she's
is
phenomenal.
Remarkable.
Yeah. Yes. Which act did she do? Did she do Meredith Tittle or did she do, what did she do?
Oh, I've seen her do several things, but one of my favorites, she did one where she got waved at across a bar and she kind of put the strap on her dress down like, oh, hi. You know, like she clearly thought the guy was good looking and it progresses. And it turns out that the guy was waving at someone else and she's sitting there without her clothes on like, oh, that's really embarrassing. And she's just such a great, and that reason when you said the Carol Burnett type stuff.
Yeah.
She is such a great actor and she is such a great physical actor.
Yeah. Very, yes.
And yet extraordinarily sexy and just so well-rounded.
Amazingly stunning. Sexy and she doesn't even know it. That's mm-hmm. what's so amazing about her as a person. She just walks into the room and every head turns and she looks, what are they looking at?
Yeah.
It's amazing to me that she doesn't realize her own sexuality.
Mm-hmm. And she's just got such presence.
But she's amazing. Yeah.
I mean, the women are so talented. And sometimes it's very hard for them because people, I mean, not so much anymore, I would imagine, right? Has it changed?
What do you mean by that?
Is there
that?
Still as much of a stigma? Like, are people still as uptight about this stuff? Do you have to find your audience? Is it getting broader? Is it getting, what is your...
It's getting broader.
With porn too much?
Say that again?
Is it mistaken with porn too much?
You know, yes and no. I mean, there are people who come to the shows and then walk away and go, oh, wait, this is an actual art form.
Mm-hmm.
The sexuality is secondary a lot of the time.
Yeah.
But then, you know, I get called stripper and I look at people sometimes and I go, you say that like it's a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's there's still people who look down on it. I have performers who haven't told their family that they do this. They're like, this is amazing, but if I were to tell my mom and dad, they would be, what's wrong with you?
Mm-hmm.
You're taking your clothes off in public.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's just shameful still in this day and age. I mean, mm-hmm. there's a war on women in this country again.
This is true.
And so there are still those pockets where it's like, this is ridiculous, but on the same flip side, you know, I have performers that come to the show and bring their parents when their parents come to town. And they're just like, I'm so proud of her.
And they should be.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or him. Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of great burlesque. So it's not as much. I mean, we're considered part of the sex industry. What we do is still taboo, and we could still be busted in a lot of the venues that we perform in for nudity and obscenity. There's still a stigma to it, but I think it's gotten better for sure.
Now, are the nudity and obscenity laws, I would imagine that city by city, you just have to be aware of what you're up against.
Mostly, yes.
Don't go to North Carolina.
You know, there, I mean...
Well, I was reading somewhere that it's illegal to peel an orange in a California hotel room. Are you guys aware of this?
No.
I have not done my research. This is not due diligence. It's also
illegal to shoot whales off of a bridge.
Yeah, yeah. Well, go figure.
That's just, I mean, that's just dangerous. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, but
each city is going to be different. There are some towns across the country that are really cracking down on it. And, you know, for a while here, when the Knitting Factory was still here, they were like, well, the law reads that you can't take your clothes off. So everybody has to do a reverse strip because we don't want to go against the law. So girls would come out in a G-string and pasties, and everyone put their clothes on instead of taking it
off. Was the Knitting Factory burlesque? I thought that was more like a music
venue. It was a music venue, but burlesque, much like a lot of things, has found its way into every, you know, I mean...
Variety.
If you want a country and western burlesque show, you could find one in L.A. Now.
Also, you got to keep a club open seven nights a week, so it makes sense.
Now that the burlesque movie happened, you know, it's like you'll see Pussycat Doll type troupes that... are burlesque in the sense that there's girls in lingerie, but nobody's actually taking any clothes off. They're singing and dancing cabaret style. They still call that burlesque, so you'll find that in a lot of venues as well.
Mm-hmm.
But the real theatrical striptease doesn't happen everywhere because, again, it's a very gray area when you've got a liquor license.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
and it also seems like when it comes into vogue, it just becomes like this broad genre. Burlesque is variety in underpants.
Well, it isn't. Leg Avenue kind of killed it all when they came out with a burlesque line. I kind of just went, we're all fucked.
Look like saloon girls.
A lot of it is. It's, you know, it's like I have a glove, I have a corset, I have fishnets, I'm a burlesque dancer. And a lot of times I get videos because I produce a weekly show. I book eight acts a week. I have to write back and I have to say, hey, this is great. You've got some wonderful pictures, but do you have an act?
Mm-hmm.
And people are like, well, what do you mean? I can dance to music. And I'm like, well, that's not what I book. That's go-go dancing or cabaret dancing. I book theatrical numbers. Think of like an MTV video for a rock band.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I want you to be doing in your act, is telling a story from start to finish while you're either taking off your clothes or having some sort of transformation in the act.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been hard because nothing against strippers. Some of my best friends are strippers.
It's different.
It's commerce and exchange of sexuality. There can be physical touching with lap dances. And when they're on stage, they're selling wares to upsell for a lap dance, where in a burlesque show... generally, your audience is very passive. They're not active, involved with you in any way, shape, or form.
Well,
so I get a lot of strippers that write me, and they're like, hey, I'd like to break into burlesque. And I'm like, great. Do you have any acting or, you know, theater experience?
Mm-hmm.
A couple of years ago, about 10 years ago, when they opened the Orpheum Theater, they did that night. And I think it was...
it was Maxwell...
Maxwell DeMille, and it was... the band, Kara Morrison and her band.
Dean Mora. Mora's Modern Swingers. Swingtet.
And the novelty acts and Dita Bontis. And she came out and did this spider and fly routine where she was basically in a leotard on a web and another girl was there. And then they cut it at that. It's sort of like, and they made it a joke. It's like, okay, we can't show you any more thing about this. And it was very almost Disney-like. We're having burlesque, so to speak, in that there are two girls on stage at the same time. But the gag of the skit was, we got to cut this before, you know, because they were going to show a Harold Lloyd movie that had been restored, and it was a big family type show. So there was the hint of something naughty, but it got yanked before anything happened.
Well, and some of the best acts, all they have to do is pull down a spaghetti strap because that's enough.
Absolutely.
And in some cases, that's too much. That gets people riled up much more than, you know, okay, there's the honky-tonk at the end of town where the girl is launching bra. You know, we don't go there. But God damn it, if we see a girl take off, you know,
a spaghetti strap. That's too, you know, come on, there are kids here.
Yeah.
There are, when I talk with the burlesque legends,
yeah,
there were three different costumes that they would have. They would have the G-string, they would have the T-back, and they would have the full panty. They would have the pasty bra, which had the pasties for tassel twirling on the bra.
Uh-huh.
Then they would have the net bras. Then they would have the actual pasties. And it would be, what town are we in? What's the code here? Oh, I have to wear full panties and a full bra. I can never go down to the two other layers of more nakedness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you'd have to know every town you were going into as you were on the burlesque circuit.
Mm-hmm. There also seems to be a stigma, both, or I don't know if stigma is quite the right word, but attention given, both positive and negative, when women are dressed up in a way that is not necessarily burlesque, but very alluring. I remember when you and I were first going out, when you went to San Francisco and went to the convention for the first time, you dressed very Audrey Hepburn in a black hat, black gloves, and a sheath dress, and you looked dynamite. And people kept coming up to you and saying, you look great.
Well, they thought I was a celebrity because I was dressed.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, it was like,
tell me about it.
Who are you? And it's like, who are you?
Yeah.
Get out of here. I'm wearing a dress. Go away.
I have friends who wear three-piece suits to the beach. They like wear, Patrick the Bank Robber, he wears a suit when he hosts. And we went to the beach one day, and he's got a white linen three-piece suit on at the beach.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
But it seems really split. Like, a lot of people are very for the look, and there are a lot of people against the look. It's almost like, that's almost too sexy, you know, to it flaunts convention, which is, you know, wearing your sweatpants around and a fanny pack.
Well, because if that woman in gloves and a hat and sunglasses walks up next to some slob, and I'm, you know, whatever, in a Juicy Couture sweatpants with Juicy written on her butt. I mean, this is the second time I've mentioned LaVey this evening, but, you know, LaVey says you can go to a full nudity strip bar, and if there's a girl who's got a broken button, every single eyeball in the place is on that broken button because it's what's in there.
Yep.
And it's the peaking of the interest.
Yep. Yeah.
And, you know, you've got full nudity in front of you, but there's no question about that. There's no chase there. And so, you know, specifically men with the hunter-gatherer mentality, going back to cave people times, you know, like it's like, well, what's in there? They're hunting, and it's the huntress. You know?
It's like, when are those gloves coming off? What kind of polish is she wearing?
That is the key.
Yeah,
true.
That is the key to burlesque, is the suspense and the foreplay.
The mystery,
It's, you know, I remember one of the first classes I took was with Indigo Blue. And I had just talked with Satan's Angel because they used to dance for 20 minutes. And Angel
sounds like you're in a biker gang, by the way.
Yeah. and Angel would be like, we take 10 minutes to take our gloves off in some towns because all you could take was your gloves and your dress off.
Yeah.
That was it. And so she's, you know. And so Indigo was like, you have to treat your hand as though no man has ever seen a hand before. You have to tease him and you say, you may have seen a hand, but you've never seen a hand like this. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to show you my hand. And I'm going to start right here with the elbow and a little bit of forearm. Ooh, it's my wrist. And it's just, that's exactly what a great strip tease is all about. Mm-hmm. And that can be done comedically or sexually, either way. But absolutely.
And when you're performing, are you running that inner monologue?
I am.
Something
I actually
like that?
Every dance I do has a different inner monologue because it's a different character in almost every dance I do. I don't have a standard because I'm not a classically trained dancer. Mm-hmm. I now have a bad knee, a bad hip, and so it's a lot harder for me. A lot of my stuff is comedic. But absolutely, every step is, what's the next level I'm taking them to? Is this a sexual point or is this a funny point for them? What's the next transformation that's going to be happening? And is it a transformation in them or a transformation in me?
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I run that through my head the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I do more of that than I have to go 1, 2, 3, 4 point kick, turn, you know, because I'm not a strong dancer because of that.
Mm-hmm.
But absolutely.
So and what kind of stuff do you do? Tell us about your very first, you know, you told us about the performance and how you almost ditched us. But will you tell us about some of your performances, both your favorite and your most embarrassing, like, you know, me last night at Night of the Raven, quoth the Raven, on the floor.
On the floor.
That was what someone said about my performance last night, because as I left the stage, I was walking, and I put the dang things there. Eddie, you helped me move all that stuff. I put the crate there.
Did you see it happen?
Nobody saw it but you and Fred Falk. So I cut, and of course, my monkey, who took off backstage instead of helping me up to laugh. But I'm coming around the, because that's the right thing to do. When you see somebody fall, you go laugh. It's, well, are you dead?
Your partner's an orangutan. It went out to the kitchen to get a banana.
I would do that too. Are you okay? Great. Because she didn't even ask.
I saw her little mouth like Charlie Brown. It was a perfect She ripped up her monkey mask and went, oh. And then, boom, she was gone.
You wrecked the illusion. I wanted people to think you actually had an orangutan out there.
I don't want them to think that. So, but, you know, so that was embarrassing, but awesome. It was my favorite part of my act, was the part where I went, you know, elbows over tea kettle, and I was just, like, sitting on the floor like a toddler. Okay, good night.
I had no idea that you fell over.
Yeah, and like I said, somebody posted on my Facebook wall, quoth the raven, on the floor.
That's
and
beautiful.
And I said, yes, that's
don't
very
don't you love big. Smart friends? Yes.
Well, and then he said, quoth the raven, drink some more. Anyway, so, but we're talking about
you. I think
you
have next year's act.
So all you people at home, here's your titillating tidbit. Lily will come back and she will entice you with partial and slowly revealed nudity on the radio.
This has been another episode of Radio Rashi. If you've enjoyed this episode, let everyone know by leaving a review in the iTunes store. It's a great way to help others find us. You can also leave comments on RadioRashi.com, Facebook.com/RadioRashi, or follow us on Twitter @RadioRashi or @Paul_Dini to leave us questions. Thanks for listening, and tell your friends.